We get the program underway this afternoon by welcoming to the program the author of a wonderful new book. It's entitled Kids on the March, 15 Stories of Speaking Out, Protesting, and Fighting for Justice. We're happy to welcome Michael G. Long to Downtown.
Hi, Rich. Good to be with you. Thank you.
Well, I love the book so much. My full-time job is being a high school civics and history teacher, so this was a wonderful and inspiring read, and a reminder, as you point out, that kids have always been activists.
Yeah, you know, when I was researching adult books on politics and protest, I would always look at pictures, historic pictures, and it would be inevitable that I would see a child or a kid somewhere in the margins of the photos, you know, in the bottom left corner, bottom right corner. I always found that intriguing, and so that led me to dig a bit deeper. But you're right, they've been in almost every major social movement in U.S. history.
And your story begins with a remarkable tale of Mother Jones and the March of the Mill Children. Can you fill people in on that?
Sure. In 1903, there were countless kids working in textile mills in Philadelphia, and these were dangerous jobs. And kids would lose fingers and even limbs. They would be stooped from working in the machines night and day. And they didn't go to school, and Mother Jones became aware of these conditions. Mother Jones was a labor leader at the time. She became aware of these conditions and decided to ask the parents of these children if they would agree to have the kids head on a march to visit with the president. And that's what they did. They went on a long trip from Philadelphia to Oyster Bay, New York, and President Roosevelt, this would have been Theodore Roosevelt, refused to see them. And this is one of those stories in the book where kids were incredibly courageous and strong and persistent, and they failed. And Roosevelt didn't make any changes to labor policy. It took a couple years, but eventually Pennsylvania changed its labor policies, and the kids eventually won. And so their brothers and sisters and thousands of other kids didn't have to work in the mills as they did.
A story that I talk with my students about, but you go into wonderful detail, is that of what really led to, I think, the most important Supreme Court case in American history, Brown versus the Board of Education. But it all started in Farmville, Virginia, in many ways, with Barbara Johns organizing the students of Moton High School to get a better education and a better school, and at the time to get back in the building and get out of those portables, as they called them.
Yeah, they had tar paper shacks. The school board, the white school board, built these tar paper shacks at Moton High School for extra space for the kids. They didn't have enough space. And the facilities were absolutely lousy. There was a pot-bellied stove there, and the fumes would fill the air, and smoke would fill the air as well, and the tar paper shacks leaked. The conditions were just unhealthy. And so Barbara Johns would have been a junior at the time, she decided that they're going to walk out of school. This is really radical, 1951. They're going to walk out of school and go on strike. And indeed, that's what they do. It's unheard of virtually in 1951 for black kids to protest their segregated schools. But Barbara Johns was just magnanimous in character and in her strength. And she led her peers out of school. And eventually they connected the NAACP, and the NAACP took that case, the Farmville case, and wrapped it into other cases and made it part of the Brown versus Board of Education case, which was resolved on May 17th, 1957. And the Supreme Court decided that public segregation in public schools would be unconstitutional. So Barbara Johns and her peers in Farmville, Virginia won. You know, what's awful about this story is that Barbara Jones wasn't around. Johns wasn't around to enjoy the victory. She had moved out of Farmville because people had threatened her life. And in fact, after the Supreme Court case was handed down, her family farm was burned down. It's an awful story, but Barbara Johns really paved the way for so many black boys and girls along the way.
Well, and yet that brings up some important points about that whole situation, that this was not a low risk proposition to go on strike, to walk out of school. First of all, many of the students at Farmville had to convince the folks at home, their parents, that it was okay to skip school, to be out there doing this. But then not just the children, but their families faced the ever-present threat of violence for what they were doing.
Yes, and indeed the school superintendent, the white school superintendent, threatened the kids when they came to visit him by saying that their parents would probably lose their jobs. You know, if you're a young kid and you go see your school superintendent about a problem at your school, and your superintendent says, because you're protesting, your parents are probably going to lose their jobs, that's incredibly frightening. But onward, yeah, it's just amazing to me that these kids marched on, and despite these threats, and threats to their livelihood, threats to their lives, threats to their families' lives. Wow. And the story of Farmville is just breathtaking.
We're talking with Michael G. Long. His book is Kids on the March, 15 Stories of Speaking Out, Protesting, and Fighting for Justice. Another remarkable fight led by a student named Mary Beth Tinker.
Yes, Mary Beth Tinker had Quaker influences in her life, and she and her brother John were opposed to the Vietnam War. And so they decided that they would wear black armbands to school to protest, to show their opposition to the war. And indeed, that's what Mary Beth did. And she was suspended from school for wearing that black armband, and her brother John was suspended from school as well. And like other significant protesters, the Tinkers went to court to protest for their right to free speech. And eventually, the Supreme Court, this is another beautiful Supreme Court decision, the Supreme Court decided in favor of Mary Beth and her brother John and a few others who wore armbands. Now, Mary Beth, like other protesters, was very frightened when she went to school. She wasn't quite sure what was going to happen to her or to her peers who were wearing armbands. But kids can wear armbands to school today. They can wear political messages. They can speak out in school. They have a lot of free speech. Now, they can't disrupt school, and they can't infringe on the rights of others, but they have a lot of free speech, and that's thanks to Mary Beth Tinker and her brother John and a couple others as well.
And it's important to remember when their fight began that the students were expected to pretty much do as they were told in school, and any protests, any kind of movement, that was to be done on your own time, if at all.
You know, that's right. And this case is a landmark case exactly because it has to do with free speech in school. You know, we're so conditioned in school to obey authorities. So when I went to school, as you went to school, we were taught to obey the teacher. We were taught to listen to the principal. We were taught to obey the school board decisions. And so to crack out of that, to bust out of that mold, is a really difficult thing to do, especially at school, where all of our lives are conditioned to obedience. Stand and pledge the allegiance to the flag. Put your hand over your heart, and so forth. But Mary Beth Tinker somehow broke out of that mold and led many others to do the same as well.
Well, here in the 21st century, the fight has gone on, led by young people, and whether it's working for justice for people like Trayvon Martin, for clean water in Flint, Michigan, climate change, to the recent incredible work done by the survivors of the Parkland shooting. The fight goes on by young people, but we're also seeing a different response, I think, Michael, in that you see now, I think of specifically with the Parkland kids, charges of people being crisis actors, and the people are being propped up by their parents. Is that response from the old guard a new thing, or were there always versions of that from those people who didn't believe students should be out there speaking?
Well, there have been versions of that throughout the years, no doubt about it. I think in 1963, for example, when the Birmingham kids marched against segregation, they faced some of those same criticisms from local whites who were opposed to their courageous march. That's the march where the kids faced the snarling German shepherds and supercharged fire hoses and still marched on for desegregation in Birmingham. So they faced some of that there, but you're right. And what's really interesting about kids who do take part in protests is that they break out of our own image of kids. When we look at kids, I think sometimes we think of vessels into which we should pour lessons or children who are under the control of their parents or their caregivers. And these kids who straighten their backbones and march, like the kids from Parkland, really show us that they're human agents who, of their own volition, of their own willpower, have decided that the adults here have failed us miserably, and we need to do something about it. Not only do we need to do something about it, we can do something about it. So what I love about the Parkland kids especially, that they grab that agency that they enjoy as free agents with their own volition, their own free will, deciding that they need to take action against the adults who failed them. So to think of the Parkland kids, of all people, I think, as passive pawns that have been propped up by adults is about the most ridiculous position one can hold when looking at kids and marches through the years.
And what the Parkland students have demonstrated, too, is the advantage of being young people with often a much greater understanding of the power of social media than some of the adults, and they've really harnessed that power.
Yes, they really did. And this is one of the most interesting things, I think, about kids marching and protesting these days, that they're much more adept at social media platforms than many of us adults are. And when we were kids, when I was a kid, it took a long time to put together a protest. But, you know, with social media, some of the kids now call together a march in a matter of hours or even a matter of minutes in many cases. And they use it adeptly to call together not only a particular march, but masses of people to turn out for a march or a vigil or to pass the word across the world as well, to pass the word across the world as well. And we saw that with Greta Thunberg in the Climate for Justice strike. She used social media so well and connected with kids across the globe so that they could have an international march for climate justice. It's remarkable to me how they use Twitter, how they use Instagram, how they use TikTok now for protests. And wow, I think it's incredible. I just think it's great.
Well, Michael, your book provides a wonderful history of kids and their involvement in speaking out, but also is a bit of a guidebook as well, with some wonderful tips at the end of the book for those organizing marches, for those participating, ways to do it both effectively but safely.
You know, I think one of the most important things for kids when they think about protesting is really just to pause and ask themselves what it is that they truly believe in and what it is that they would worth that they would risk some of their time and energy for, or do they feel as if they have enough freedom to march? Do they feel as if their personality fits the act of marching or the act of boycotting or sitting in or so forth? So those tips at the back of the book are helpful for figuring that out. But I don't want to suggest at the same time that all these kids are fully prepared to protest and to march. I think that some clearly aren't. And maybe because there are so many different ways to protest, maybe the using art is a better way, or writing a protest poem. There are lots of different ways to protest, and I hope kids will keep that in mind too.
The book is called Kids on the March, 15 Stories of Speaking Out, Protesting, and Fighting for Justice. Michael G. Long, the author. Michael, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate you making time for us, and thanks for your wonderful work on this.
Thanks so much. It's been great chatting with you. Take care.